My favorite movie is A Man for All Seasons. I first saw it when I was a teenager, and I watched it at least once a year, every year for the rest of my life. When I was a full-time professor at the seminary, I would show it every year to my students, and every summer, on June the 22nd, I would have a screening of it for my fellow faculty members. You might guess that June 22nd is not an accidental choice. It's, in fact, the Feast of St. Thomas More, because Man for All Seasons deals with the last years of Thomas More's life. The central drama of the story, as you probably know, centers around Henry VIII and his attempts to secure a divorce from his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, who was not able to produce the male heir that Henry wanted so ardently. With the help of his chancellor, Cardinal Wolsey, he tried to cajole the Pope into giving this dispensation. The Pope refused. Upon Wolsey's death, Henry VIII chooses as his next chancellor Thomas More, a man who was greatly admired as a scholar, as a statesman and diplomat, a man of letters, and a very holy man. He chose him as his chancellor and then continued to seek this divorce, the permission for it from the Pope. Pope continued to refuse, and so finally, as we know, Henry broke with the Church of Rome, established his own English church, and this new English church promptly gave him the divorce that he had been seeking for so long. Now, Thomas More was a very loyal Englishman. He was a very loyal servant of the king, but this was too much. Without explaining precisely why, More simply resigned his office as chancellor. Some of the most affecting moments of the movie Man for All Seasons deal now with the years after More resigned. Henry knew that this was a problem because More was so admired, so his opposition, at least implicit opposition to him, was a problem. So Henry tries in all kinds of ways. He tries to cajole him, he then threatens him, he takes away his freedom, takes away his home, trying to get More to give in. Thomas More is played by the magnificent Paul Scofield, who was a wonderful actor, Shakespearean specialist, and beautifully evokes Thomas More, especially during these years when he was struggling. He finally ends up in the Tower of London, under arrest and threatened with the rack. More is eventually brought to trial, and his trial was held in a hall that he knew very well as a man of the law. It was Westminster Hall, and there he was arraigned and he was tried, and really through a combination of chicanery and legal maneuvering and jury tampering, Thomas More was condemned for high treason. He was condemned to death. The judges asked him before passing sentence if he had something to say, and More rose to finally speak his mind on this topic. And it's one of the most magnificent moments in the movie because what's reproduced is the speech itself. We have records of it, and almost word for word, Scofield delivers, he reproduces the great speech of Thomas More. And the climactic moment of it really is when More says what he objected to was the fact that Henry was assuming for himself an authority which Christ had promised to St. Peter and the bishops of Rome whilst he lived. That's the language of More himself. And was personally present here on earth. He concluded, it is insufficient in law, therefore, to enjoin any Christian to obey it. What he was doing at that climactic moment of his life was defending the authority of the bishop of Rome, the authority of the Pope. And he was doing it as he stood condemned to death in Westminster Hall. Now, how could I not think of all this when, just a few weeks ago, a shy German scholar, who also happens to be the present Bishop of Rome, walked into that same hall. It was one of the stops on his trip to England. Pope Benedict came into Westminster Hall, that very place where More was condemned and where the movie was filmed, came into that room, and he addressed the kind of English establishment, politicians and economists and business leaders. And he made some opening remarks, and then, very quickly, he invoked the memory of St. Thomas More, who he said was condemned in this place. Thomas More, who is admired, he observed, by both believers and non-believers, for his great dedication and his great loyalty to his own conscience. Here's what struck me, is how wonderful the ways of God are. How wonderful the ways of God's providence. Thomas More, at the end of his life, rises in that place to defend the authority of the Bishop of Rome. And Benedict, the Bishop of Rome, arrived in that same hall and in a very interesting way vindicated the great English martyr. Now, I don't mean in some jingoistically religious way, as though he said, you know, I declare the Church of England is over and I have authority over this church. I don't mean that. What I mean is he very quietly but firmly invoked his moral authority. His topic in Westminster Hall was that any healthy democracy, any healthy government, is grounded finally in moral principles that are known through philosophical and religious forms of reasoning. If those principles themselves become the subject of democratic deliberation, the whole system collapses. They must be the foundation for democratic deliberation, not the object of it. When they do, the country is led on a short road to chaos, if I can quote a line from Thomas More. And that is why the Bishop of Rome concluded that aggression toward religion, which is sadly apparent in many of the secular Western countries today, is not only a violation of a basic human right, it's also repugnant to the very foundations and principles of a democracy. And so how wonderful, how interesting, how fascinating that the Bishop of Rome now in 2010 comes into Westminster Hall and, invoking his own great moral authority, subtly but powerfully vindicates St. Thomas More.